Moncrief on News Talk.
No better man than Donald Trump to bear a grudge, even the faintest whiff of criticism. And the US president can't let it go, usually launching relentless personal attacks on his perceived enemies. The Pope, Giorgia Meloni, Bruce Springsteen, they and many, many more have suffered his wrath. And there seems to be a widespread perception, particularly among world leaders, that it's usually not worth it, that it may do more harm than good. Better to say nothing, or even flatter him a bit, in the hope that eventually he'll go away. So is that true? Larry Donnelly is a columnist in the Journal and law lecturer at the University of Galway. Good afternoon, Larry.
Great to be with you, Sean.
Yeah, so, but there is, there does seem to be, it becomes, particularly in among European leaders, it seems to become a habit now of just say nothing or, you know, try and butter them up a bit, and people are competing to try and be the Trump whisperer.
Yeah, and I think there's probably a sense of, you know, make it go away. And I think with just 2 years to go, I think maybe some are getting in that direction. I suppose this is precipitated by his most recent encounter with Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, where, you know, and again, it should be said that they would, at least from the exterior, would seem to perhaps have the most in common, politically speaking. Although I don't think Meloni is as hard right as some of her critics portray her to be. She's on the right wing, but I wouldn't view her as in Viktor Orban's orbit or anything like that. And this comes down to a recent meeting in Images where, you know, evidently Trump claimed that she was begging him to be photographed with her. And then on the other hand, there was an image that did get circulated in which she seemed to be scolding him kind of vociferously. He claimed that she wanted that for at home for an Italian audience to be seen to be standing up to the president. But I think if you zoom out from all of that, I think the reality here is power. And the United States, for all that ails it at the moment, remains an enormous power. And Donald Trump has demonstrated that he will use that power in a variety of different ways, in ways that previous American presidents would have not done so. And I think a lot of European leaders are saying it's best not to make an enemy of Donald Trump. And however we have to go about that, we will do it. And that has led them into some very embarrassing situations, in my view. You know, we heard the view about, you know, sometimes daddy needs to tell us what to do and this sort of thing. Some kind of embarrassing conduct. But I think it's born out of realpolitik because of America's continued dominance. And I think at the same time, because in lots of different areas, Europe developed something of a dependency on America and what America used to be, especially in the military sphere and elsewhere. So they feel like we are vulnerable here. Let's not make an enemy.
Yeah. Now, but as I understand it, Meloni, her popularity rates are dipping. Trump is not popular in Italy, so from an electoral point of view, from her point of view, that was a cute move.
Well, this is. I think Meloni is one of the cutest of all, and I think that's ultimately what this is all about. Is she is very shrewdly playing to that domestic audience in the sense that yes, there a lot of them would be with her on immigration, tighter restrictions on immigration, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, they're also revolted by Donald Trump, for whom, and I think a lot, not just Italians, a lot of Europeans would say is the quintessential ugly American. Even though they might agree with him on immigration and some other things, they look at him and say, he repulses us. So I think it's Meloni, again, that really cute path that she's trying to weave there.
Yeah. The thing is, though, is that going back to the real politik, at this stage of the game, he embarked on an insane war with Iran that mostly hurt the people who voted for him. He's refused to sign an Affordable Home Care Act, again, which hurts the people who voted for him. The Supreme Court just said no to his birthright citizen thing. Isn't the real political situation now, and perhaps shouldn't European leaders be thinking he's on the way out?
Yeah, and there's no question about that. But still, there's something of the last sting of a dying wasp here. You're going to have a guy who has 2 years to go, regardless of what happens in the midterms. And I agree with a lot of what you said in the sense that you could extrapolate from what he has said and done that he doesn't care what happens in the midterms, that he really, because none of it is in the interest of Republicans seeking office in November. None of this is going to help them in any way. So one gets the sense that he's going to try to do whatever he can do by executive order, by pushing the limits of the presidency to its outer bounds. And European leaders will be aware that the president of the United States, when it comes to foreign relations in the foreign sphere, does have an awful lot of authority, does have an awful lot of things he can do. So that's why, even though, as you say it, he's somebody who, you know, second, you know, last 2 years of a second term president, you know, typically tends to recede a little bit. Trump isn't that kettle of fish, so they still have to be careful.
Yeah. What could he do?
Well, it's down to a whole host of different things that he might push. I mean, by executive order, he can do lots of things. We've seen he's willing to use military. We know he still has designs, for instance, on Greenland. I don't think that has gone away. All of that will be very frightening to Europeans. And I think in one way, one of the things I've heard from people in Europe is that in one small sense, Trump maybe has done them a favor in the longer term, in the sense that it's made Europe wake up to certain realities that arguably had been pushed away, pushing to the side. Now it knows it needs to squarely confront those in the face and deal with them. But in the meantime, we still have 2 years of the guy being president of the United States. He's volatile. He's unpredictable. We don't know what he can do. And I think that's why we see Europe engaging the way it has. And of course, people in Europe, particularly those on the left, are going to be very critical of the way, again, some of the more embarrassing things or flattering things that have been said. But it is, again, born out of a sense that we are vulnerable.
Yeah. Now, at the same time, Canada seems quite capable of standing up to Trump.
Yeah, and it's been remarkable. I mean, their prime minister, who I think in many ways, Mark Carney, who in many ways has been seen by a lot in Europe as sort of a leading light on this, he's been rather robust. Even though there have been harsh consequences in terms of the trade relationship for his country, but he has stood up in a very strong way. And if you look at a lot of his rhetoric around this idea of medium-sized powers, of the lesser so-called powers, including lots of countries in Europe, Canada, perhaps Australia, New Zealand, others, you know, that might be in that orbit, perhaps being a third counterbalance in a new world in which perhaps we have the United States on one side, perhaps roughly Russia and China in the same orbit, but a very, very much a big need for another force, and perhaps a sad recognition that the United States won't be part of that element. Now, again, all of these things are mutable. I mean, it's going to take a while to change things. Trump has affected a lot of change, both attitudinal and real, around the world, that is going to take time to recalibrate one way or another, if Americans are minded to do so. And that's an open question. But I think the reality is, as Connie has said, and as other European leaders have said, we do need to face up to certain challenges.
Yeah. Now, and those challenges are there internally in the United States, going back to that, you know, he's damaging his own base. It must be clear to large elements within the Republican Party that he's doing just that. It must be clear to people in his administration that he's doing that. Surely at some point they're going to say, whoa, you know. Well, no, I mean, it's not like they're going to, you know, try to impeach him, but distance himself from him at least.
Well, this is really important. I think there are two levels to this. In private, everything you have just said is absolutely going on. Up to and including the Vice President J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, everyone around him, when they are having private conversations, they are saying, this guy is a disaster for us. He's a disaster for our futures. He's a disaster for the brand in many ways. We need to get rid of him. That's the private comment. But in public, and here's where they're in difficulty, in public, they cannot say that, because in my lifetime, I have never seen a politician who commands the sort of undying loyalty that Donald Trump does among the MAGA faithful, who now constitute a huge element of the Republican base. So much so that I think with only one or two failings around the United States, every candidate he has endorsed this primary cycle, including candidates who are going up against long-term entrenched incumbents, have won. And Republicans, as much as it's in their interests in November to subtly distance themselves from an unpopular president with the general electorate, they do so at the peril of alienating that base who will not harbor any dissent or any criticism of their man. I'm not saying they'd vote for Democrats, but they just might stay home. And in a context in which they need to cling on to every seat, it should be a good election for Democrats, even though Democrats are doing some things that I consider unwise. It should be a very good election for them. But Republicans, in order to make the best possible result, they need every vote. And that means criticizing Donald Trump is, you know, unwise, and that puts them in an awful, awful position politically.
Yeah. Why are the MAGA base so loyal to him still? Because they are literally going to the gas station and seeing the result of his actions there.
Well, there's one thing I'd say about that particular issue. And one of the things I think Trump is banking on, and don't forget, people say, is Trump dumb? Is he a genius? I don't think he's either one. I think he's cute, and I think he's cute and comical in a way Irish people would say someone down the pub might be cute, in the sense that he's banking on the fact that people may have short memories. And we know what's happened with the price of petrol went sky high, but now price of a barrel of oil and everything else are going down. And if prices do go down, my guess is Trump is betting that that will work out, that that will work out for his party. But the question, the bigger question about the loyalty, I think it comes down to lots of different things. I think he's done an incredible sales job to make these people think that he, I mean, a scion of privilege, the top 1.1 of 1% is somehow one of them. And his sort of approach to politics, his rhetoric, his language is something that they continue to find, I suppose, welcome in a situation where the same old rhetoric from Republicans and Democrats left them in the same place. And if you say to them, well, Trump hasn't succeeded on your behalf, well, they would say, well, neither did George W. Bush, neither did Barack Obama, et cetera, et cetera. We're much more comfortable with this guy. And I think that remains true for a segment of the electorate. But it comes down to a lot of bigger questions than those in terms of raw politics. But in terms of where the United States is, and these are things we don't talk about often enough when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to access to higher education, all the things that here in Europe we take for granted, those things are not, you know, as easy, they're nowhere near as easy for vast swathes of America. And that leads to a malaise, and that leads to them being desperate enough to continue to rally around somebody like Donald Trump.
Yeah, even though Donald Trump hasn't produced the goods, because you could see why they were attracted to him in the first place, drain the swamp and all that, but he is the swamp now.
Oh, he is. Yeah, he is. But it is some of his effective salesmanship comes down to, you know, talking about going back to culture war issues, things like that, talking about the way America used to be, using the issue of race subtly and not so subtly, even though that's a complicated one in and of itself, because we saw the way Latinos gravitated towards him in 2024. So all of this has led to sort of this lethal cocktail of disenchantment, where so many Americans are willing to sign on to that when, as you say, the reality is he hasn't delivered for them. The question, I think the big question going forward is the Republican Party, as was once known, the party of Mitt Romney, John McCain, et cetera, you know, whatever we think about those individuals, that sort of high-minded conservatism is gone. Donald Trump has executed a full takeover of the Republican Party in terms of its ideological leanings and where the conservatism goes. It'll be interesting to see how that plays itself out in the years to come.
Yeah, and given the long-lasting effects it's had on the world internationally, given the effect it's had on politics domestically in the US, is this the end of the age of American exceptionalism? That reconfiguring that Mark Carney was talking about, might that leave the US, to an extent, on the sidelines of things?
I think it's a great question, because if you ask an awful lot of Americans, they will still say things to which I think are demonstrably false. It gives me no pleasure to say this idea of we are the greatest country in the world. There's nowhere as free as we are. So our civic religion, as it were. They will say, continue to repeat things like that. But at the same time, one of the reasons Trump did so well was this idea of America first. And he's betrayed that motto, like he's betrayed lots of other things as president. But there are very many Americans who do want America to stand aside and be less a participant in global affairs and less and more someone who looks after their own people and what happens at home first. I think that was a large part of his appeal as well. So it's hard to measure. You know, here we are at America 250, July 4th tomorrow. It's hard to get a sense of where America is headed. But what I would say is, in terms of Trump, he isn't the cause of a changed America. He is a symptom of a changed America.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a change that's, I suppose, been going on for quite some time, really, rather than it just arrived with him.
If you look for decades now, I mean, if you go back 50 years, the percentage of people who thought the American dream was still alive, it was very, very high. Decade on decade on decade, it has gone down considerably. And that has been a fact of life under Republican and Democratic administrations. The gross income disparity, the distance between the haves and the have-nots grows inexorably year by year. We are looking at a model, an economic model at least, that is broken, in my view, and consequently, and this is where I really fear, is we're looking at a social model that is breaking down in many respects, and we have a lot of work to do in the United States. But as I keep saying, I try to be as optimistic as possible, and one of the things I keep talking about to people is, a lot of people went to the World Cup and said, this is going to be off. I'm terrified of ice. I'm terrified of this. I'm terrified of that. What's it going to be like? There's all these MAGA people, et cetera. And the experience of most of those who went has been an enormously positive one. And the thing they keep coming back to is the American people and how much they've been welcomed. And one of the comments I heard an English soccer fan make, which I took to heart, was if you want to hate America, turn on the TV. If you want to love America, drive through it.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Has it had the, do you get the sense that it's had the reverse effect that perhaps America's going, no, the rest of the world isn't so bad. They're not living in hell, in hell holes all over the place.
Yeah, I think for an awful lot of Americans it has. There will still be the debates, and social media has been kind of funny to watch through all this about air conditioning, about tipping, about American food. It's been funny, to watch all that. And of course, there are differences, but look, I think we have to be hopeful. I am hopeful that things can get better, and I'm heartened by the fact that there are so many Americans who are working to change things for the better. But nonetheless, at 250, America has an awful lot of challenges right now and a lot of problems.
Larry, happy 250th to you. Not your own personally, of course. That was Larry Donnelly there, law lecturer at University of Galway and columnist at thejournal.ie.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.